Thanks. Put this thing on. My name is Kermit, and I'm an addict. I'm clean today through the grace of God and Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to speak in front of a group of addicts anywhere in the world. Doesn't matter, you know. I used to worry about speaking until somebody told me the percentages. They told me that 20% of you will listen to every word I say and hang on every phrase. And 20% of you won't listen to anything I have to say because you know much more than I do. And the other 60% of you will be lost in your own sexual fantasies. You figure out which percentage you're in. I walked into my first 12-step meeting in August of 1979. I was in treatment wearing what the well-dressed addict wears, blue pajamas. You know, when you're in treatment 2 weeks, you're well, right? And they sick you on the newcomers. So this little group of well folk came down the hall to get me. They were going to carry the light to me. And they said, "We're going to go to this alcohol meeting." I thought, great, you know, I'm a social chameleon. I can fit in anywhere. You tell me the game plan. So I went down with the little group smiling, you know. Got into a little treatment room, and it was a little different than this. I was 26 years old. I was the lead singer in a new wave punk band. I looked around the room, and there was these 40- and 50-year-old guys, and they had big red noses and pot bellies and bald back to the hair. They said, "If you want what we've got," I said, "Fuck no." I'd be willing to go to any length not to catch that, whatever. I quit drinking for the next 2 years. I went through two more treatment centers, strung out on heroin, but I was sober. Oh, God. I did absolutely nothing in treatment. I got out and did Kermit Anonymous. I don't suggest it as a recovery program. No sponsor, no meetings. Go to the bars where you play rock and roll and drink Coca-Colas and show people how cool you are that you're clean. And I relapsed. Duh. I didn't have a relapse. I called the treatment center. I said, "I think I need a refresher course. First time didn't take." And they're kind of like the fellowship. They said, "We love you. Keep coming back. That'll be $10,000. I had to go through three treatment centers, have insurance pay $30,000 to find out that the meetings are free. Right. Yeah, I got my $30,000 white check. Oh, shit. So here I'm in the second treatment. I'm taking it really seriously. I get caught naked with a girl in treatment. Oh, and then you got to go to the group and apologize. "I'm sorry I threatened her sobriety." Yeah, right. Oh, come on, I was just giving back what was so freely given. She started it. The counselor finished it. Some guy said to me the other day, he said, "You should have finished it. You paid $10,000. Oh, God. So here I am, yeah, right. Doing the same stuff, you know. I didn't do anything treatment, dope fiended to get out early. I remember showing up in 90 days to pick up my chip, because back then you got a white chip and you had to wait 90 days to get your next chip. And a little old-timer AA lady sneered at me and I never went back. And, yeah. Sound familiar? She, oh, there she is, right. Keep coming back, yeah. My sponsor. Oh, God. So, you know, I picked up again, and it was worse, and it was worse, and it was worse. They told me in the treatment center that I had a disease. They said it was chronic. Once you got it, it never went away. They said it was progressive. Over time, it was going to get worse and worse. And they said it was fatal. And I remember I was 17 and talked to my best friend every night. I was in Boston. He was in New York. And I called up his house and said, "Can I speak to Ned?" His father said, "What is this, a joke?" And his sister got on the phone and said, Ned did 300 milligrams of methadone last night. He overdosed and died. This guy was a concert violinist. He was going to Juilliard in New York City. He could write sonatas. I got kicked out of the band. That was a good one. Here's one of our songs. I'm going to kill the president. Wrap him up in wet cement. I was too sick for that. Right. Oh, God. I got a store. I lost the store. The whole thing went in my arm. I lost my wife. I lost my son. I got in a relationship with a married woman whose husband taught at the University of Virginia. And he went away for the weekend, and she invited me over, and the guy decided to hitchhike home from Washington, D.C. Took him 3 hours. Got to his house at the top of this hill. Climbed the hill, happy to be home, opened the front door, happy to be home, came up the stairs to the bedroom and opened it to the fine sight of me doing it to his wife. And I was a friend of his. He said, get out! I got out. And I went out back into my car and I sat down and I had all those feelings we have at the bottom. I felt disgusted with myself, ashamed, embarrassed. I called my therapist. I said, I think I need to go to treatment. He said, well, they won't take you anymore. It was only one treatment center. I hung up the phone. I didn't know what to do. I remember there was some deal at the local mental health. Of course, it was 12 blocks from my house. It's old adage, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear, right? And God's going to put people in your life you don't even know they're there. I walked 12 blocks down to this thing, and I got this counselor on a sheet, and he said, come back tomorrow and see Martin. And I walked in this guy's office the next day, and the first words out of his mouth, he said, you know Wesley? I said, yeah, he's my heroin dealer. He said, well, I sent Wesley to treatment down at the beach. He's got 6 months clean. I said, I wonder why the dope was short. And that's what they did. They sent me from Hampton, from Charlottesville, Virginia, in the mountains, to 3 hours away to a treatment center where they'd started the first NA meeting in that town, in that treatment center. 6 months before I got there. I'd been looking for recovery for 2 years before I met my first NA member because there was no NA for 200 miles. And I walked into this treatment. I went to my last connection, bought $200 worth of dope, got in the car, drove across the state, and I was stone cold straight by the time I got there. I could do massive amounts of drugs, and just they didn't do anything anymore. And I got into this treatment center, and I noticed immediately a serious architectural defect in the planning of the building. I wanted to let them know right away. There was no doorknob on my side of the door. They put me in this detox that used to be the crazy thing and slammed this metal door shut, and I'm a three-time loser. I'm never going to get this stuff. It was 7 days of detox before they let me out because you had to stop shaking. And on the seventh day, the well group came down the hall to get me, and they said the words that were going to change my life. They said, would you like to go to an NA meeting? I said, yeah. Because that AA old-timer told me there was this thing in California called Narcotics Anonymous. And I walked into my first NA meeting, September 1981. I was in blue pajamas. I weighed 50 pounds less than I do now. Okay, get honest. 150 pounds. You know, heroin chic, right? Skinny as a rail, right? I was like, oh my God, I was so crazy. I was in blue pajamas. My skin was yellow. My hair was matted up. My tooth was chipped in half. And when I sat down in the meeting, I knew the women were checking me out. Regular Brad Pitt, right? Oh, my God. I was so crazy I had to build a world around me I could feel comfortable in. And they read out a little white book. That was all the literature we had. We had a white book with all the readings in the back and a few small stories and 5 pamphlets and chips. And they said, one is too many, 1,000 never enough. I said, no shit. You know, everything they read in that pamphlet hit me in my heart. And I want to say I surrendered that day, and it's been great. Surrender wasn't in my universe. I didn't know anybody who surrendered anything. Everybody in my life controlled everything. My family, the people I ran with, I didn't know what it was. I couldn't get it, right? I remember I had 21 days. Well, the other thing I did in treatment was I wrote a 4-step, what they called 4-step. It was a first step. It was every time I got high and got in trouble. And it was 72 pages, both sides. It was just those days, right? But I remember they had an NA speaker meeting. I'll never forget. I was 21 days clean, and this guy was tied with biker chains, rough, tough. I was in blue pajamas. You want a piece of beer? I was scared to death of this guy, right? I was just shaking, you know? This guy told the worst war story you ever heard because the AA people said go to NA and talk about drugs, so that's what we did. And he talked about being in 12 treatment centers and state-run psychiatric hospital. He'd been in Eastern State and Western State. He had 40 white chips. That's like an outfit, a belt. This guy tried to get clean 40 times. And I'm sitting there three-time loser, right? Eastern State told him, if you show up here again, we're going to put you on the other side of the fence where you never come out at the insane asylum. He finished his story and sat back down, and at the end of the meeting, they called him up to the front of the room, and they gave him his one-year medallion. I said, a year, that's forever. I said, if that son of a bitch can stay clean. NA gave me hope, right? That SOB, his name was Billy East, and he died 2 years ago with 31 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. Amazing story. I got to the end of my treatment stay, and they told me to go to halfway house for 6 months, and I knew they were right. I mean, you got to lock me up, right? Put me on the street, I'm going to use, right? So I called on my higher power. I don't know if you know, her name's Patty. I called my girlfriend. I think I should go to the halfway. Oh, no, I cry all the way there. What should I tell him? She said, tell him you've made your mind up. So I went back to group. I made my mind up. They had one of those super groups, my group, the group next door, all trying to tell little Kermit to surrender. If I go to the halfway house for 6 months, she'll leave me and my life won't be worth living. Aww. We were married 9 months later, and a year after that we were annulled, and my life's been great ever since. That's how I left treatment, with everybody telling me I was going to be loaded by nightfall. And basically, they were right, okay? I drove across Virginia on 64, around Richmond, and got out to the mountains, and I saw a sign that said 7 miles to town, and the disease started talking. And it was loud. Where can we get some money? Where can we get some dope? What kind of story can we tell the connection? I'm like, sure not. She's going to hear you. I moved out of my brother's house because he was shooting heroin. I couldn't stay there, so I moved in with my best friend who was only dealing cocaine. I made a decision. So I got to this hippie apartment where he threw a mattress in an empty room, and I laid down on this mattress with Patty, and I just started shaking. And something inside of me cracked, and I told her the truth. I said, all I'm thinking about is, how can I get some money? And, I'm really scared, and I don't know how to do this shit. And she said, you know, there's an AA meeting tonight. And I said, okay. And we can go to that. I said, okay. And folks, 1981 in the mountains of Virginia, they were not thrilled to see addicts in their AA meetings, right? I sat down in a meeting with 50 people in the room, and they're all going around the room. My name's Betty. I'm alcoholic. The room go, hi, Betty. It got back to me. I said, my name's Kermit, and I'm a drug addict. And three people said hello. I mean, there was a hush. And I didn't care. And it was round robin, so it came back to me. And I said, raised my hand, told him what was going on with me. And this redneck cowboy was standing next to me with a dumbass grin on his face. He had the answer right. He was just smiling. You won't believe what this idiot says to me. He says, just don't get high today. I said, what? You mean till I go to bed? He said, yeah. I said, I wonder why I didn't think of that. I went to bed that night clean, and I woke up the next morning free. I'm not saying I hadn't had a desire since then. I've had some barn burners, but I knew that I never had to use again the rest of my life one day at a time in these 12-step meetings. September 6th, I'll be celebrating 32 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. Surrender is powerful. It's powerful. And I had a second surrender the next morning, and that was the second half of step one. It's the part we always miss. That my life was none of my business. Every time I made my life my business, I wound up in blue pajamas. On a good day, right? On a bad day, I wind up in Boston General throwing up buckets of blood because my friend pushed the needle down and walked out and left me to die. On a bad day, I wake up in White Plains County, sheriff, you know, in the hospital there with a sheriff standing over me with a riot gun and 2 pounds of barbiturates. On a bad day, I have to tell my 5-year-old son that he can't spend the summer with me because I can't stop sticking needles in my arm. And Brian looks up to me and says, well, why, Daddy? I said, well, you can't. Why? Because I'm sick and I can't stop doing drugs and it's not your fault. I'm sorry. And he went to Mom to cry and I went to the bathroom to get off. I went to every meeting that they had. And there was, you know, 7 meetings at night and 3 in the day. And after 4 months, Martin pulled me and Wesley aside and gave us a starter kit and said, why don't you go start one of those NA meetings? Cool. Folks, I'm not a good leader. I'm not even a good follower. I get lost. Right? This guy gave me the pamphlet, right? And I was on fire, man. I was the committee. I was the literature committee, the PI committee. The phone was at my, I was chairman of G&I, guilt and intimidation. I see we have some local chapter presidents here. So I made up this little flyer, you know, send addicts to our NA meeting one, and dropped them off in different places. And a week before our first meeting, I get a call from this guy from the University of Virginia Hospital. He says, I'm Dr. So-and-so from the 6th floor psychiatric ward of the University of Virginia. We've got this 14-year-old girl up here. She's been eating speed and trying to commit suicide. It's her 3rd time here, and we don't know what to say to her anymore. Would you come and talk to her? That's been guru with 4 months. But I was the H&I committee. I didn't know 2 people on a 12th. I didn't know 2 people on a 12th. Thing. Well, I just showed up, right? And now, when you've been using for like 15 years and you got 4 months clean, I told this poor young girl every rotten, scummy, disgusting thing I'd ever done in my whole life for 1 hour and 20 minutes. And the last 5 minutes, I said, and I go to NA and I have 4 months clean. And she said, okay. She was nodding and she was going, me too, me too. Our stories weren't the same, but they were the same, right? She was identifying. And they let her out of the hospital. Her name was Jennifer. And she was having trouble with one day at a time. She'd go a few days and eat some speed. And after one of the meetings, the guy says to her, well, Jennifer, if you can't stay clean one day at a time, why don't you not use from tonight's meeting to tomorrow night's meeting? And Jennifer said, okay. And in 4 months, we'll be giving Jennifer her key tag for 32 years clean and narcotic. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we laugh and joke, and it's a lot of fun, but the reality is that that 14-year-old girl would have been dead by now. But instead, she got clean. She stayed clean. She got a degree in social workers, and then she got MS, and she's withering. And it breaks my heart, but she's in my home group, and I pick her up every week for the meeting. You know, she said, we beat addiction, we'll beat this too. You know, those are my heroes in NA, you know. I had 9 months clean and I decided my sponsor was down at the beach and I'm still like running half the show, 2/3 of the show, let's get it. 90% of the show. But at least it was the recovery show. It wasn't the heroin show. So I decided I was on step 3 because that's where cool people were back then. You're really cool when you work at step 3. So I decided I was going to look for God's will in everything, right? There'd be, the light would turn red. Okay, it's a sign from God because there's going to be an accident. A napkin would fall off. It's a sign from God, right? But I tell sponsees, if you want to know where God is, he's right on the other side of willingness, right? So I told him, you know, so I was willing, right? So I get into Patty's car. I still don't have a car. And there's a letter there from the sheriff's department. I knew they wanted me to come and speak. And it was a warrant for my arrest. Something I know you guys never did, writing checks knowing there's no funds. And one of these checks had gotten lost for like a year, you know. And I'm mad, right? I'm like, here I'm doing all this good stuff and NA and I'm clean. And so I take this letter and I hold it up in the sky. I said, all right, God, what do you want me to do about this one? And the Beatles song, Let It Be, came on the radio. Speaking words of wisdom, I thought, shit, I've heard from the Almighty, Paul McCartney. I mean, that's as close to let go and let God as you get, right? It's like, there will be an answer, let it be, right? So I turned this stuff over to God. I said, you know, I'm going to turn it over to you and act as if it's already taken care of, and I'm just going to do the next right thing to do. And I didn't worry about it till the night before court. And that morning I was a nervous wreck, but I was dressed in a nice suit and had my little recovery book on my arm and went down to court. Like what Richard Pryor says, I go to court for justice, and that's what I find, just us. So they call my name, and I'm doing the long walk from the back of the God grimace. I get up to the front, and the judge, it's the judge. You know the judge. The one who said, if I see you here again in this court, I'm going to try you to the fullest extent of the law. That judge. That's why I'm a nervous wreck. And he says, Mr. Osterman, you want to tell us something about this check? I said, well, Your Honor, he said, hold it. He calls the lawyer over for Safeway. He says, Counselor, do you recognize this check's a year old? The little counselor says, yeah, sure. So, well, you can't prosecute this man in a criminal case for a check that's a year old. So I can't. He said, no. He said, well, you can prosecute him in a civil suit and get your money back unless you're here to pay what you owe. What do you think? I said, yes, Your Honor, that's what I'm here to do. He said, pay the man $32. Case dismissed. I didn't get to open my mouth. I was a newcomer. Yes, Your Honor. And I broke into that cigarette machine with David Rangel when we were 12 years old. And I threw the rocks off the bridge. And I was going to admit every crime I'd ever done. Oh, yeah. I've had a deep faith in the God of my understanding since that day. Let me tell you, when the music plays, I listen, right? I was talking to Sponsy. I said, you know, God has five answers. He said, really? I said, yeah. It's yes, no, wait, you've got to be kidding, and if you must, God will let you do it, you know, if you must, right? Oh, God. Somebody's asking me, I was speaking in the Ukraine about 4 weeks ago, which is beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, that's, you know, I talk, Kiev, Ukraine, their first convention for that country. And I got to be the Saturday night speaker. And it was real interesting because their speaker meetings are all regular NA speaker meetings. Is a 30-minute talk, a break, and then you ask the speaker questions. And I said, well, that's pretty cool unless the speaker's an idiot. Then you get to listen to an idiot for half an hour, and then he gets to make up answers for But it was really cool because, you know, there's a three pitch rule in NA, right? There's the pitch you're going to pitch, the pitch you actually pitched, and then the pitch you should have pitched, which is what you're always in your head about after you speak. Like, oh, God, I should have, oh, my God. And then we had a question and answer, and they asked me every question about, you know. And, you know, one of the questions was about, you know, the disease or, you know, listen to God. So, well, it's pretty simple. The disease of addiction talks loud and rational, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's always saying, "Here's this is what we got to do. We have to do this. We got to do this. This is what we got to do. We really got to do this." And God talks quietly and suggestively. God says stuff like, "You might not want to do that. You might want to go over here." You know, says, "Listen to the still, quiet voice." I'm going to fast forward here. At 5 years clean, I heard a loud pop. It was my head coming out of my ass. I had a crisis, a spiritual crisis at 5 years clean. I had an NA sponsor. I wanted to talk about that too, but we'll see how much time we got left. But he was in Memphis, Tennessee, and so, you know, when your sponsor's 1,800 miles away, it's easy not to call regularly and start screwing off. So I decided I needed a local sponsor, and I went to the Virginia convention, and there was a guy, Michael, who was a soft-spoken, quiet kind of guy. He's a leader, you know, but he was quiet, and I took him to his first NA meeting. And I grabbed him on the steps of the convention, and he thought I was going to bitch about something because I was a purist radical, and I said, Michael, he said, what? I said, I hadn't done this in a while. I said, would you be my sponsor? And tears came up in his eyes. He said, I'd be honored to be your sponsor. Honored. That's the kind of guy he was. He said, where are you at with these steps? I said, I don't know, 7, 1. You tell me I'm lost. He said, what's the last thing you did? I said, I wrote 1 through and 3, and I sent them to Joseph. He said, great, we're going to do a 4-step. I said, ha, God damn great. Give me that huge questionnaire about the 700 questions about your mother's sex life. And we had a killer four-step guide back then. He said, no, I just want you to write about three things. I said, what's that? He said, resentment, sex, and fear. I said, I could do that in a sentence. He said, really? I said, yeah, I was resentful and fearful that my wife wouldn't give me sex. And he said, set me up for an appointment for a fifth step. And I said, what's that for? He said, well, you got to give an addict a date, you know, or they'll flounder forever, right? So I give these guys a date, right? So he sets me up for this appointment, and I'm typing. I was going to be a travel agent and learn to do that. So I was typing my fourth step, and I wrote, you know, I asked God's help and started writing, and I wrote, I felt abandoned when Georgie left home. And I started to cry. My sister left home when I was like 14 and she was 17. And when I say I felt abandoned, here's my family's theme song. Doodly-doo. Doodly-doo. I tell people, I could creepy, kooky, spooky, I could handle that shit. My family, nah. My father was a big cigar-smoking lawyer from Scarsdale, New York, and he left at a real early age because he was a workaholic. He pushed the bicycle and said, pedal, and that was the only life information he gave me. Didn't teach me how to do a checkbook, didn't teach me how to do my taxes. He was a tax lawyer. Nothing. My mother was a depressive, and when my father left town, my mother let the cats and dogs go in the house. We had 29 cats and 3 dogs, and nobody cleaned up after them. And we lived in this manicured city, and then there was the crazy house. And my father married a younger woman, my stepmother, and they were picked us up at school, and we're driving back and lit up a joint, and I got high with my parents for the first time. And my stepmother and I laughed, and we bonded, and we had a really good time. And she looked after me. She was looking after this lost kid. She would dress me in cool clothes because the clothes my mother dressed me in were guaranteed that no girl would ever talk to me. You know, gave me a little afro. And, yeah, then it got bigger. You can see me with purple shirt and orange pants and an afro. The 70s, man. Yeah. God. So, you know, so I have a brother, Mikey. And my stepmother has a little boy, blonde-haired, 5-year-old kid, happy all the time, smiling. He had 7 brothers and sisters who loved him. And Mikey was just the sweetest thing you've ever met. And he was in an apartment in the Bronx on the 13th floor, and he was sitting on the edge of the ledge, and he heard a siren and leaned against the screen, and the screen fell out, and Mikey dropped 13 floors and died. And my stepmother cried, and she wept, and she cried. And my father didn't know what to do, so he would hand her a glass of scotch and say, here, drink this, you can get through the service. Drink this, you can get through the 7 days with families coming over. Drink this, and she drank, and she drank. She drank a gallon of vodka a day for the next 20 years and ended up hemorrhaging and bleeding to death in an apartment in Queens, not before molesting me when I was 17. So when I say I felt abandoned when my sister left home, you have some idea what I'm talking about, right? I went to do my fifth step with my sponsor in Virginia Beach, and the best story I ever heard about a fifth step, it's mine, I stole it first, right? What's the rule in NA? You got to give credit 3 times, then it's yours, right? This guy's doing his fifth step with his sponsor, and the sponsor said, read what's on your inventory here and just add to it, and he's reading and adding and reading, and 8 hours later, he finishes up the whole thing, and the sponsor says, is that it? And the guy says, yep, that's it. The sponsor said, you sure? He said, yep, you got it, everything, that's it. He said, you sure? He says, yep, yep, yep. Okay, give me a hug. And the sponsor, he's leaving his sponsor's apartment. He gets to the door, and he yells that one thing he was never going to tell anybody. I had sex with a chicken. Sponsor yells back, did yours die too? There are only so many things that the human mind and body can perform, and honey, we've done them all, right? So if you think your stuff's so weird, you're going to be rejected here, forget it, right? Because if I haven't seen it or done it, I got a dozen guys that's already talked to me about it. So I told Michael about my chickens, and then he told me about his, and I went, oh, you're sick. He said, so are you, my friend. That's why we're working these steps. And he took my inventory and he rolled it up in a tube and he held it in front of my eyes and he said, not forever and not for always, but for this moment in time, are you entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character? He said, all this pain and all this hurt. I said, yeah. And we bowed our heads and shared that willingness with God. We went back to Virginia Beach to his house, and we put the papers in a pile on his front lawn, and we got on our knees, and he said, what's your favorite prayer? I said, just for today. And we prayed that, and we lit the paper on fire and humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. And I like to say, if you get real spiritual and write your resentments on paper and burn them, they'll be gone. Ask me, here, burn this shit. You know, it took me about 20 years to figure this shit out. Defects of character are our defense mechanisms, okay? We put on a don't screw with me face, and we're angry at the world. We push people away. We're people pleasers. It's my favorite. Have you read my book, Codependence Some More? Oh, come on. I've been married 4 times, right? Now I can really talk about relationships. But yeah. And so what recovery tells us to do is to do the opposite. If we're greedy, we need to learn to be generous. If we're, if we're fearful, we need to learn to walk in faith. Because what happens in 8 and 9 is, ninth step is not the I'm sorry step. Right? My sponsor went around Memphis when he first got clean saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. He said, I was the sorriest motherfucker in Memphis. He said, I was sorry I got caught. Amends means living in a way that it never happens again. Which means if you say, Mom, I'm sorry that I haven't been there for you, guess what? You have to be there for it now. And the only way you can do that is if you've learned a new way of living. The only way you do that is if you've learned what the old way is that doesn't work. So steps fit together really well. That's why 9's not at the beginning. It's towards the end. This whole deal is about getting to humility, right? And I always thought that meant like humble. You look down at your shoes and talk. That's not what humility is at all, okay? Mother Teresa had humility, right? Has. She went to India, Calcutta, India, without a penny in her pocket and built a huge hospice building where they take dying people off the streets and they put them in beds and they wash them so that they can die with dignity. And she did that without a penny, right? Gandhi stopped eating salt. Some of his friends went on a little march, and all of India stopped eating salt. Salt was so integral to the British economy, it would have crippled them. They picked up their bags and walked out. They couldn't get them out for 100, right? Dr. King walked around America and talked. All the guy did was talk. And a black man is the president of the United States of America. That's what humility is about. And, this woman says that, our biggest fear, Nelson Mandela wrote it, our biggest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our biggest fear is not that we're too small. Our biggest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. And he says, inside each one of us is a fully actualized person like Gandhi, Dr. King, Mother Teresa, someone who walks in complete faith. And he says, it's not in some of us, it's in all of us, right? So recovery process is to get you to a place where that can happen to you. Because when we look at doing inventory, we look at the past and it's black and it's dark and we don't want to go there. But what we found is when you look through the black and you get it all out, what's under there is light. And the light shines and it's attractive, right? See, when I got here, my world was from my house to the connection or from my house to the bar, okay? 3 weeks ago, I was the Saturday night speaker at the first Ukraine convention in Kiev. It's beyond my wildest dreams. On the way back, I stopped in Amsterdam in Holland, and a friend of mine that I'd met in NA gave me a key to his apartment. And they said, would you like to speak somewhere? I said, sure. So this guy set me up Monday in Amsterdam, Tuesday in Rotterdam, Wednesday in the Hague. I spoke 7 days, and, it was awesome, beyond my wildest. I've spoken in NA conventions in England, France, Germany, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Russia, Kiev, Ukraine, Iceland, South Africa, Israel, Turkey, Greece, Hawaii, Alaska, Calcutta, India, 40 of the 50 states, and 3 different provinces in Canada. Wow. Wow, right? Beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I could never think this big. If they told me in treatment, you know, write down what would you would have in recovery after a year, it would have been all money, property, and prestige. You know? And I got all that. Right? Well, I'm a famous person in an anonymous program. You watch, you'll see me at the convention, like people be hugging me like from one end to the other. But the really cool shit is I don't care. It's like, right, big deal. I'll go to the hotel room and watch a movie and be very happy. I don't have to have this, like, you know, feed my ego stuff because that's not why I do this stuff, you know. Somebody asked me, like, what is this whole thing? 12 steps are a simple program to take us from totally self-centered to totally God-centered. When I believe a God-centered person is someone who's healed inside and is being of service to others, right? They asked me in Russia, they invited me to an old-timers meeting. How cool is that, right? The guy says, we have a meeting at the clubhouse, and it's an old-timers meeting. We don't have it on the schedule, but it's once a month we get together. Would you like to come? I said, sure. And next day I told one of the guys, I said, well, ask them if they want me to speak. And the next day they said, yeah, yeah, we want you to speak. So they did speaker discussion, right? And so I spoke for like a half an hour. One guy asked if he could record it. I said, sure. He puts his phone on the table and records the whole thing. And 2 weeks later, I was in Riga, Latvia. I've got a sponsee there. And the guy said, oh, yeah, I know who you are. It's on the NA Baltic website. I said, how the fuck did they? Oh, we're real tech savvy over here. That was great. We were in St. Petersburg. Like, we were like the first NA people they'd seen in 10 years. And my wife goes, so what do you think about Americans? He said, we don't. And that was cool shit. Like, we're not even on the radar with these people. God. So I go to this old-timer meeting, right? And I speak for like a half an hour, tell my same story. And at the end, the first guy raises his hand and starts asking me a question. And the chair's like, no, 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 no. I said, dude, let go. Look, we did a 30-minute question and answer session with all the old-timers in Moscow. You know, guys that are going to meetings once every 6 months or every 90 days, you know, they just don't, you know, why do you go to meetings after all these years? And why do you call yourself an addict? And why do you do all shit, you know? And then explaining all, it was like, what a gift from God that was, you know? You want to heal a fellowship, work with the old-timers, right? Because they're going to, everything's going to come down. They said, why do you keep going to these meetings? I said, well, you know, at about 20 years clean, I thought, you know, I've been doing this NA shit for a long time. Maybe I should just do something else. And World Poker Tour, that sounded good. Of course, my wife said, I will divorce you. Right? I thought, maybe I'll go write a book, you know, just go off somewhere. And then the next thought was, where on earth can I see the miracle happen every day? Where on earth could I go to see dead people come back alive? Right? Only here. Everything I have, I owe to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't have the heart to say no when NA asks me to do anything. Please. Please, right? You know, my son Brian is 40 years old. I was just on the phone with him. He's a sweet, humble guy. He doesn't use, he doesn't want to use, he doesn't need a meeting. That's because NA taught his father how to be a human being. Before I came to NA, the only thing I could do is teach him how to use like a pig, right? My stepmother's dead. My other running partner, when I fell apart, my wife and I, he married my wife, and he kept drinking. He had hepatitis C, and he died from that. And my other running partner was my brother, Barney, and he came to NA. He didn't like it. He came and went in and out. One of his outs, he caught the AIDS virus, and 15 years ago, we buried him from AIDS. He died. The other half of the coin is that my sister, Juliet, just celebrated 30 years clean in NA. My father remarried, and my stepmother, Zan, has 26 years in NA. My brother, Henry, is a counselor in New York. He's got 21 years clean. My sister, Dee Dee, has 9 years, and my sister, Susie, has 7. Right? So I'm grateful. Right? The end result of working this, it dawned on me like about a week ago, I lived the Serenity Prayer. Hello. I accept the things I cannot change. I have courage to change the things I can, and basically I have wisdom to know the difference. The result of working the 12 steps is that this stuff becomes internalized and it becomes automatic. You don't think about it. It's the most natural thing for me to make amends when I screw up. It's the most natural thing when I hit a brick wall to stop and go a different direction. It's the most natural thing for me to ask God. I talk to God every day, right? And I spend a lot of money traveling, and I get these huge fucking credit card bills that have to be paid in like 3 weeks, right? And they all get paid every fucking month. I'm looking at a $16,000 American Express bill from this trip, and it's going to get paid. I have a sign in my house that says, I don't believe in miracles, I depend on them. So I'm talking to God, and I said, God, was Moses as doubting as I am? He said, oh, worse. So I'm going to end with a song. I hope you're open-minded. But I heard it in Nashville, Tennessee, where I met my first NA spot. Let me talk about Joseph real quick, because it's a good one. I had 2 years clean, and I'd been to a couple of conventions. And when you're 2 years clean and you've been to a couple of conventions, you want to be cool, right? So I go to every meeting and put my hand up and say some cool shit at the microphone, right? I was arguing with World H&I. We didn't even have an H&I meeting. At the end of the meeting, this guy Joseph, who was friends of my mentor, this guy Larry North, and he said he was watching me, right? And he comes up to me and smiles, give me a hug, and says, you must have spoken on every one of them tapes. I thought, who is this asshole? He said, I heard you identify yourself as being clean and sober. I said, yeah, I'm physically clean from drugs and emotionally and spiritually sober. He said, you know, I looked up the dictionary definition of the word sober, and it means somber, serious, moderate, and not drunk. He said, I can't afford to limit my recovery that way. He said, I looked up the dictionary definition of the word clean, and it means free from dirt and disease. He said, I go to NA not only to get physically clean, but spiritually clean, emotionally clean, clean in the way I deal with the world. He said, where do you find your recovery? I said, well, you know, I go to the NA meetings I can get to, but I work in treatment. One year wonder, work in treatment, I'm recovery man. I have the keys to the van. Oh, it's so easy to look good when you stand next to somebody who's puking on his shoes, right? Keep coming back. Someday you'll have quality recovery like I do. 2 years clean. So, you know, he said, all my life I never made a commitment anywhere. If I didn't like this group of friends, I'd go to this group. If I didn't like, you know, this girl, I had another one across town. He said, you need to make a commitment where you're going to recover and get off the fence. He said, if they need a speaker for the AA meeting on Friday, would you be? I said, well, they got 100 people. He said, well, what if they need somebody to chair NA on Tuesday? I said, well, there's only 8 of us. He said, you need to make a commitment and get off the fence. And then when the service arguments get difficult, it gets uncomfortable, you can't take your ball and go home. You got to stick it out and grow up. You know, I said to him, thanks for sharing, buddy. Got the hell out of there. Flew back to Virginia. Went right to the Easy Does It AA clubhouse in Virginia Beach. Sat down in my chair, right? Who does he think he is? Blah, 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 blah. And they called on me on a topic. And I spoke on the topic. I never talked about my drug use. I just said, my name's Kermit and I'm an addict. And at the end of the meeting, this old drunk stomps up to me and he looks me in the face. He said, we don't talk about drugs in here. And marched out the door. Never saw him again. You know where I was the next day, telling an addict he can't go somewhere. Sitting in the same seat. Ha, who do they think I am? I just picked up my 2-year gold coin, right? I'm sitting in this meeting fuming, and I hear the still, quiet voice, and it says, what are you doing here? I said, resentment. The voice said, is that any reason to attend a 12-step fellowship? I said, no. And I got up out of that noon meeting in 1984, and I made a commitment to only go to NA for my recovery. And the next time I saw that jerk from Memphis, I asked him to be my sponsor because he talked to me about integrity. Talk to me about putting my money where my mouth is. He said, you're going to ask people to bet their life on NA, and you're not willing to do it yourself, right? NA was very splintered back then. We all went to AA every night in our one, quote, drug meeting, which is why when we got the basic text, we read Powerless Over Drugs. That's all we saw, because we'd been doing that for years in AA meetings. And it took the literature committee teaching other people for us to learn what addiction really means, that I have an addictive personality. and it's not, you know, what I'm addicted to. I love it. Michael was at his first meetings. He was 30 days clean, and he was at the after-meeting meeting, and he was going up and down like a caged animal. Some guy said, "Michael, would you sit down?" He sat him down. He said, "Mike, I got some good news and some bad news." And Mike said, "Oh, I hate this shit." He said, "All right, what is it?" He said, "The good news is you never have to use again the rest of your life one day at a time in Narcotics Anonymous." And Michael was doing tons of heroin. He's like, "Oh, God, if I could just not, what's the bad news?" The bad news is drugs aren't your problem. Drugs were my solution, right? Yeah. So I made this commitment to only go to NA. And at the time, people were telling us we were going to die. AA people were telling us there was not enough long-term sobriety in NA and you're not going to make it. So we were scared. And we were loud, and we were, you know, forceful, right? A friend of mine in England put it really well. He said, "We are the children of Alcoholics Anonymous." He said, "And when I was a kid and I got to 16 and 17, my parents didn't know anything. I knew the right answers, and you're wrong, and I'm going to da 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 da." So NA had to do that growing up, right? And he said, "Today I'm an adult. I've got a family and kids, and we're on a different level, my parents and I." So NA had to go through that growing up period where, and my sister said to me, she wanted to put on her purest t-shirt, "The war is over, dot, 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 we won." When people ask me about like NA language, and I was like, that's like the Bob Dylan song, "I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now." NA will do just fine. We don't have to kick anybody's ass. We can quietly talk to them after a meeting and let them know the differences. But the purest stuff is great. You know, it saved Narcotics Anonymous. It made NA as we know it. Because when I read that line, or they read it in my home group, "NA as we know it," I was like, it wasn't here. It wasn't here. A simple way is providing itself in the lives of many. It is available to us all. Do you know what that sounds like to me? It's magic to me, because it wasn't available to us all. It is today. You know? Someone, you know, I kept hearing this buzz about NA Iran, NA Iran. There are 750,000 NA members in Iran right now. Wow. You know, one of there's the Ayatollah is the highest thing in the religion, and underneath him is five or six mullahs. And one of the mullah's son got clean in NA early on, and the guy wrote a religious paper, a fatwa, that said there's nothing in the 12 steps that violate Islam, and NA got a pass across the whole country. And I was in Holland, and somebody explained to me some little piece of this that I had never heard. He said, "There's no other A's in Iran. There's no AA, there's no OA, there's no G. They all go to NA." It's the whole country, right? Making a commitment to only go to NA changed my life forever. You know, I was in Europe and I was thinking about it. Joseph had died a couple of years ago, and I was at his funeral, and right after that I was speaking somewhere in Europe, and it dawned on me that Joseph gave me a message to carry. He gave me a message to carry, and I carry it with honor and dignity, you know. Because the people that wrote your basic text are the people that I got clean under, and they treated me as one of their own. And that was more than I could imagine for somebody who was 1 year clean. I first met all these guys at the Georgia Convention in 1982, and there was a woman named Gail from Nashville, and she sang this song Saturday night. And I said, "Gail, that song's beautiful. Can I share that when I speak?" And she said, "Oh, it's a gift from God. Pass it on." And it's called "The Last Time I Saw Michael," and it sums up everything I believe about NA. And with a drink of water. It goes like this. "Someone introduced us somewhere. I don't remember now. I guess we started talking, but I don't know what about. Michael was from Florida by way of NYC, and from that moment on, he became a friend to me. Well, I always used to see him, and sometimes we'd drop by, and every time he'd be alone just trying to get high. The high was never high enough. He tried day after day, and helplessly I watched his spirit simply slip away. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I read the evening papers, they called it heart attack, but I know damn full and well he overdosed on smack. So now the party's over, they've gone and rented out his space. I never will quite forget the look on Michael's face. God, he used to sit and brag the money and the dope he had, but I just can't forget how sad Michael looked to me. Well, I'd like to say in closing a story sad but true. And somewhere lives a Michael in me and all of you. And I am deeply grateful for what I have today, because I would be where he is if it wasn't for NA. Thanks.